Blog Talk Radio.
Write the book. Yeah, I love this song. It's way old. I was 23 when the song came out. I loved it. Loved it then. I still love it. My main man, Elvis Costello. Met him once. He is so cool. I tell you what, today is December 21st. Oh yeah, 2010. Washington, D.C., the United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun. I'm your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones. Let's get right down to it. Oh, my goodness. Net neutrality. Yeah, it's kind of like what's happening here in the United States with our government. It's very much like, it's very much like when you know, the thing about putting a frog in a in some water, you chuck them into some hot water, and I've actually done this, by the way. I have no problems doing it. I did this. You chuck a frog. I mean, just to see what it was really all about. You chuck a frog into some hot water, and he'll just jump right out, right? Because he doesn't want to be in the hot water. Right, and so he'll jump out. He's gonna get scalded. And he's gonna die. So what you do is you put the frog or the toad, if you prefer, in some cool water, and then he'll just kind of swim around. He won't know what the hell is going on. Right, he'll swimming around and swimming around and swimming around. And, you know, of course he wants to get out of the pot because, he's got places to go. So, but that's neither here nor there whether he has. But nevertheless, you put him in the pot and then you gradually increase the heat. And you turn up the heat ever so slowly, very incrementally. And the next thing you know, you got yourself a boiled toad or frog, you know, or lobster if you're hungry. You don't want to eat the toad or the frog, but it's the same thing that's happening here with this net neutrality thing that's just passed with the FCC, right down party lines. 3-2. And here's why you Democrats should be concerned about this. The Republicans don't believe in over-regulating the United States citizens. Republicans do not believe in getting all up in your business. No, no, no. But Democrats, well, that's what they're all about, getting all up in your business and telling you what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. So even though there's no issue that the internet is working fine, and it's been working fine for many, many, many years, the FCC has voted to regulate the internet just in case those big bad internet companies, Verizon, all the cable companies that handle internet, just in case they get out of line, the feds will be able to step in and do some stuff. They'll be able to step in and take over. And then they'll be able to step in and just do the job. They'll be able to step in and just pretty much take over. And they can take over and just do whatever they want to do with the internet. And they can say, well, here's how we're going to do this. We're going to, you know, the mean old companies, these really mean old bad companies are all about profit. They're all about making money. And that's all they really want to do is just make money. So, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go ahead and we're going to regulate the internet. Folks, your freedoms are being eroded a little bit at a time. Like the frog in the bucket. Your internet, I mean, these things are just the beginning. So now the recap is the U.S. communications regulators, the FCC, has adopted internet traffic rules to prevent providers from preventing providers from blocking lawful content, but still let them ration access to their networks so that the government can ration access. The Federal Communications Commission approved the Open Internet Order after FCC Chairman Julius Jackowski, his plan got the support of fellow Democrats Michael Copes and Megan Clyburn. The Megan Clyburn is, if you recall, the lady who said that every little nappy-haired child should have free access to the internet. And Megan is black, by the way. If a white person had said that, all hell would have broken loose. But because Megan is black, she can say every little nappy-haired child should have free internet. Now, they claim the rules aim to strike a balance between the interest of the internet service providers, content companies, and consumers. But there's going to be a court challenge. When the federal government gets its hands in the pot and decides that they are going to regulate things, well, shit happens. And it doesn't happen for the good. Aren't you really tired of the government over-regulating and regulating every single thing you do? I mean, the government has its fingers its nose under the tent of every single thing we do in our lives. And that's not what this government was supposed to be about when it was founded. And I know that some of you think that, well, they're here to protect us. They're here, they're looking out for the little guy. They're only looking out for my interest. You know, that's tired old bullshit. Can we just talk here? Can we just be honest and frank? When is it going to end? Every time the government gets its nose under the tent and decides that they want to get involved in our everyday lives, nothing good comes of it, or rarely does anything good come of it. These folks want to regulate something that doesn't even require regulation. There have been no complaints. There have been no court hearings. There have been no challenges. There haven't even been any congressional hearings. This is the domain of Congress. And so what the FCC has done is they've gone ahead and circumvented Congress and then established their own rules, which is why there'll be a court challenge and Congress is going to look into it, because there has been a federal injunction demanding and ordering that the FCC not do this. But they've done it anyway. And here's what's going to happen. When the federal government gets involved in these things, it stifles fiscal creativity. It stifles free markets. It stifles innovation. Democrats don't care about that. Innovation, they don't care. Certainly, companies making money, they don't care. It's all about power. Power, power, and more power. And you know what? I hasten to say this, because it's something that I don't want and I don't look forward to. But every single year, especially the last 2 years, the government has been brazen in its quest to regulate us, to be involved, to demand to be involved in every aspect of our lives. And you know, this healthcare issue where we are demanded demanded of us that we acquire health insurance whether we want it or not, whether we want the plan that they want us to have or not. We're demanded to have to do that or face fines or criminal prosecution. That is true. Everywhere the government is becoming more and more intrusive. And you know, it started with 9/11, really, in as far as I can tell. And then with this Obama administration, it's just like they've become brazen. They've just come right out of the woodwork like roaches, like worms, like festering pusses of nasty, foul worms coming out of the woodwork to regulate what goes on in the United States of America, every single thing we do. And people don't care because they're like the frog or the toad in the pot of water. And a lot of you all out there, you're just going to, it's just like, it's no big deal. Oh, this is no big deal. This just, you know, it's not going to hurt anybody. You know, I heard O'Reilly on the O'Reilly Factor say, well, you know, it's not going to happen. It's not going to affect anything. You know, the American people won't stand for it. The American people won't allow the FCC to do this and the FCC to do that. With all due respect to Bill O'Reilly, you're a pinhead. You're not a patriot. You're a pinhead. We cannot afford, as citizens of the United States, to take the view that, oh, it's not going to go that far. Oh, it's going to be okay. Oh, it's not going to be a big deal. I'm going to go ahead and cite these two, Hitler and Mussolini. The Italian people said, well, no, this can never happen here. This could never happen to us. During the Third Reich, what was going on there every single day for 11 years, that's how long the Third Reich lasted, even after Hitler proclaimed that it would last for 1,000 years. It lasted only 11. But every day of that 11 years, German citizens were walking around saying, oh no, that's not happening. Oh no, this can't happen here. You watch. If you all continue, some of you, continue to let these things slide and not voice your concerns or your issues or not develop any concerns or issues, you're pretty much doomed. And here's what's going to wind up happening. A great many American citizens are going to get fed up with this government. And here's what I believe is going to happen. The Obama administration is going to go too far, too often, and there's going to be an uprising in the United States of America. What is going on with our federal government is very, very similar to what happened when the 13 colonies were under the rule of the King of England. He overreached, he overtaxed. He sought to regulate everything that the Americans were doing. He taxed and he taxed some more. And he basically stifled the freedoms of the Americans living in the 13 colonies. And those folks rose up. It is in our blood to do so. These people will stop at nothing to regulate every single thing you do. Thank goodness we have what I would consider a buffer, which is the Republicans taking control of the House. And then there being more Republicans gaining a foothold in the Senate in January. For example, Senator Jim DeMint, Republican, South Carolina. Well, he says the Federal Communications Commission should be renamed the Fabricating a Crisis Commission. Following a vote by the panel's three Democrats to approve proposed rules that amount to a hostile takeover of the Internet by a government agency acting illegally, the proposal misleadingly described by proponents as an attempt to ensure net neutrality by guaranteeing equal access to the Internet was introduced a year ago by Julius Jankowski, President Obama's appointee to the FCC chairmanship. Isn't that interesting? Well, President Obama appointed this moron. And just like most of the folks that President Obama supports, this man believes in taking over. This man believes in more and more regulation and grabbing power. And I wonder if Obama sat down with him and said, hey, this is what we really need to do. This is just a small piece of a very, very big puzzle. And we need to go ahead and get a foothold into this area so that eventually we can control what content goes on the Internet. Interesting. So, now a federal court has ruled that the commission has no authority, none, mind you, to regulate the Internet. The FCC has no authority to regulate the Internet. And a bipartisan group of senators and representatives warned Jankowski not to attempt to impose a regulatory regime on the Internet earlier this year. But, you know, much like folks in the Obama administration, these people are brazen. They have no interest in working with Congress if Congress does not agree with what they want to do. So here you have government agencies ignoring the will of the people, this administration ignoring the will of its citizens, entities within this government, like the FCC, ignoring Congress, bypassing Congress. And you know what? I believe that within the next 2 years, the Obama administration is going to be doing more and more and more of this, bypassing Congress, bypassing the Constitution, which Obama has said on numerous occasions is fundamentally, is, quote, fundamentally flawed, end quote. And that the Supreme Court has never taken up the issue of redistribution of wealth and all that crazy, wild craziness he said that you folks seem to love so much. They're going to circumvent the Constitution, circumvent Congress, the executive branch, everything. Because their goal is to ultimately rule this country. Not to govern, not to take your 4 years or your 8 years of service and then move on down the road. No, ultimately circumvent the Constitution any way they can, by legal means or otherwise, and then rule this country. And one of the first steps in ruling and becoming a ruler for any country through time immemorial, through history, throughout the whole history of this world, throughout human history, is to control the message, control information, information control. If you control the flow of information, you control the people. This is what they think, and has worked up to a certain extent throughout history. And so one of the first steps is to for the FCC to get a toehold on the internet so that they can exert their control and then ultimately decide what content goes on the internet, who puts the content on the internet, what message gets out, what message is stifled, what message is blocked. Now, you think I'm going too far, that I'm talking crazy? You watch. Unless these folks are stopped, and I mean by peaceful means, I mean stopped. We need to get out and vote. The next 2 years are going to be critical for this country to survive. This is all a small part of the puzzle, but it is a part of the puzzle nonetheless. You're going to have to get involved, folks. A federal court has ruled that the commission has no authority to regulate the internet. A bipartisan group of senators and representatives warned Jankowski not to attempt to impose a regulatory regime on the internet earlier this year. I said this already, but I just want to say it one more time. So they are going against the rule of a federal court, the ruling of a federal court. And they're doing this anyway. They are brazen. They are arrogant. It's no longer this. This administration, this current administration, has no respect for the rule of law unless it favors their point of view, their ideas. This administration has no respect for the Constitution unless they can find something within the Constitution that favors their point of view or their ideology. Then they will gladly cite the rule of law. They will gladly cite the Constitution. Those bits and pieces that favor their ideology. The move's legality was even questioned by FCC Commissioner Michael Cope, one of the Democrats who voted today with Jankowski, saying he considered voting against the proposal because it lacks a significantly defensible legal basis to survive a court challenge. Promised by major internet service providers like Verizon, Microsoft, and AT&T. But legal challenges by the industry, are likely to be much less of a problem for Jankowski-led takeover than efforts in Congress to stop the FCC in its tracks. That's clearly what DeMint has in mind. As he said in his statement released today, following the FCC's actions. And here's what Senator DeMint said. The Obama administration has ignored evidence that this federal takeover will hang a milestone of regulatory and legal uncertainty around the neck of a vibrant sector of our economy. Proceeding on its own liberal whims rather than facts, this FCC has chosen to grant itself broad authority to limit how business can bring the internet to consumers in faster and more innovative ways. Americans loudly demand a more limited federal government this November, but the Obama administration has dedicated itself to expanding centralized government planning. Today, unelected bureaucrats rammed through an internet takeover, even after Congress and courts warned them not to. To keep the internet economy thriving, this decision must be reversed. Regulatory reform will be the top priority for the Republicans in the next Congress, and I intend to prevent the FCC or any government agency from unilaterally burdening our recovering economy with baseless regulation. In order to provide the stability businesses need to grow, I will work with my fellow senators to see passage of my FCC Act, which would ensure that the FCC can only use its rulemaking powers where there is clear evidence of a harmful market failure, as well as the Reins Act, which would add the accountability of a congressional vote before any government agency's proposed major regulations may be finalized. You see, folks, most Democrats do not care about this economy and business, and people working within the economy. They only care about amassing as much power as they can to do what they want. I certainly hope that Senator DeMint is successful in his efforts to stop this overreach. And I hope the courts get involved and find these folks in contempt. I would like to see them fined in contempt for ignoring a court order, haul their butts into court, and either have them reverse this decision or have them held in contempt until they do so. If any of us, anybody within my hearing of my voice, violated a federal court order to do something, you'd be under the jail. You'd be in Supermax in Florence, Colorado, or some such place. This would not stand. But here these folks are. Are they begging citizens to rise up? Are they begging for another serious Tea Party event? Are they asking for a revolution? Because it seems to me that they're doing everything they can to rile up the American citizens. Folks like me and those extreme wacko weirdos who live out in the boonies, out in Tennessee and Kentucky, and wearing fatigues and training, and they all hate the government, those kind of folks. I mean, they're just riling those morons up. And regular people, just like you and me, when are we going to say enough is enough? Well, here's how I'm going to exercise my dissent. Here's how I'm going to tell you how I'm going to fight back against the Obama administration. I'm going to make sure that I get the word out and I go out and vote. Every single chance I get, I don't even care if it's a dog catcher. If he's a Republican, I'm going to vote for a Republican dog catcher. A plumber, I don't give a damn. I'm going to see that every single Democrat, I don't care where he is or what he's doing, is gone from the political landscape if my vote counts. This is outrageous. And it's getting worse all the time. And how dare anyone say, hey, don't you have anything better to do? Instead of worrying about this stuff, this stuff isn't going to hurt anybody. This is no big deal. You got a lot of other stuff to do. No, this is going to affect me and everybody I know and love. Because it's just the beginning. It's just the beginning. Now, Obama. Where do I begin on this cold Tuesday night? Obama's problem, as the smartest person in the room, since Obama first stepped onto the national stage, pundits have fallen all over each other in a race to declare that Obama is special, that he has a special type of genius. Tom Shales of the Washington Post recently called Obama the smartest kid in the class. Billionaire Julian Robertson claimed, Obama, from all I read, thinks that on every occasion, he is the smartest person in the room. And I think he often probably is. Like, you got to be kidding me. These people are such sheep and butt kissers. It's embarrassing. I would be embarrassing to say that about anybody else. Unless his name was Albert Einstein or Robert Oppenheimer. Obama's the smartest person in the room. Are you kidding me? I know a dog that's smarter than Barack Obama. He's right downstairs in my garage. Are you kidding me? Robertson may be half right, according to some. Obama apparently does consider himself to be the smartest person in the room. According to Peter Baker of the New York Times, one prominent Democrat lawmaker told me, Obama's problem is that he's not insecure. Really? Is that why he whines and complains when people complain about him? Is that why his skin is so thin? Because he's not insecure? Is that why he bristles at the slightest hint of criticism? Because he's not insecure? What the hell is going on here with Mr. Peter Baker? Is he just another one of those brown nosers who got his nose up Barack Obama's ass? He always believes he is the smartest person in any room and never feels the sense of panic. How do you know that? I tell you what, some of these people are complete morons. They certainly don't deserve to have jobs doing what they do. How do they get these jobs? If I was Shale's editor, I would have fired his ass. You got to go. How do Shales, Robertson, and even Obama know that the president is the smartest kid in the class or the smartest guy in the room? There is an interesting little disgust quandary. In logic, it's called aporia. In the assertion that person X, whomever that might be, is the smartest person in the room. Now, before we examine this problem, let's set down some parameters. What do these people mean by smartest? Since the discussion is about politics, It's fairly safe to assume that smartest does not refer to some standard test for intelligence. Let that digest for a moment. Thinking it through, Obama's admirers cannot be referring to his IQ. In terms of IQ, Obama is clearly not the smartest person in any room he enters. The fact of the matter is that Obama's IQ scores have not been made public. Guesses by enthusiasts of his IQ range from 140 to 170. Are you kidding me? 140 to 170? Dude needs a teleprompter to address six people. He uses a teleprompter to address a group of fifth graders. Now, how smart can he be? I mean, come on. Are you kidding? I mean, this kind of thing just really chafes my ass. For those of us with 170 IQs, 170 plus in my case, this sort of thing just gets my goat. Barack Obama might be pushing 130, but nobody really knows. Hell, mine is 174. But hell, if I wanted to, I could say it's 199 or 250 or 239 or I'd be who the hell knows. It might be 1,753. Now, Obama's detractors calculate a much lower IQ, of course. Even conceding the highest score of 170, which is not the highest score, by the way, Obama will not always be the smartest person in any room. He would rarely be the smartest person at the local Mensa convention, of which I attend regularly, and never be the smartest person at a meeting of the ISPE, of which I am also a member. Talking about me right now, Dr. Jones. Perhaps smartest denotes having the greatest overall knowledge, i.e. real world smart. Is Obama the most knowledgeable person in any room? That, too, is unlikely. Imagine a party attended by a physicist, a historian, such as myself, a neuroscientist, an English professor, and President Obama. Let's assume they all have roughly the same IQ. The smartest person in the room, in terms of knowledge, would depend upon what topics are discussed. If the subjects are plasma energy, synapse firing, cyclodides, and the proper use of Gurad, Obama will not be the smartest man in the room. Keep in mind that prior to becoming a politician, Obama's claim to real-world intellectual status was as an instructor, not a professor of constitutional law. Many folks have stated that he was a professor of constitutional law at the prestigious University of Chicago. No, he was a simple instructor, not a professor of constitutional law, which the media seems to throw out there all the time. I've heard it so many times. Professor. I am a professor. Obama was an instructor. He was a helper. Okay? Minor ducats, professor, major. Professor, more prestigious. Instructor, basically a glorified teacher's helper. That's what Obama was. He was a teacher's helper. You know, made up lesson plans, that kind of thing. Maybe taught every once in a while. than like a PhD student or candidate would do. Teach a class every now and then. My goodness. There's another possible definition of smartest, though. Obama could have the most street smarts. Yeah, possibly, since he hung out on the streets of the south side of Chicago. And isn't dead. You gotta have some brains to accomplish that feat, I'll tell you that right now. Well, this kind of intelligence would entail being the most cunning and devious person in any room. Street smarts. Let's call this the Machiavellian smart. Here, Obama might take the prize. As we will see, no one except Obama would know and be able to truthfully assert that Obama is the Machiavellian smartest person in the room, because that would spoil this little scam he's running on the American people. As Machiavelli said, it is double pleasure to deceive the deceiver. Think about that. I'll say again. Machiavelli said, it is double pleasure to deceive the deceiver. Of course, this double deceiver must not be caught in the act of deception. Sound like anybody we know by the name of Barack Hussein Obama? If by smartest, Shales and Robertson and everyone else except Obama, who makes such a claim? I mean that Obama is the Machiavellian smartest. They would be willing dupes to an ongoing hustle. Machiavelli describes such associations this way. One who deceives will always find those who allow themselves to be deceived. Once again, Machiavelli described such associations this way. One who deceives will always find those who allow themselves to be deceived. They'll always find them. It's easy. It's like finding your mark. It's like sizing people up and then making your move. I'm not implying that Shales and Roberts have been bamboozled. Of course they have, but I'm not implying that. Although they are clearly gushing in their praise of Obama's smarts, whatever those might be. What I am asserting is that they do not and cannot know what they're talking about when they claim that Obama is the smartest person in the room. A claim by Y that X is the smartest person in the room depends on how smartest is defined and on whether or not Y is in the room with X. Consider once again a room containing a physicist, a historian, a neuroscientist, and an English professor. Y agrees to tell us who is the smartest person in the room. In this example, smartest means highest overall knowledge. If Y is smart enough to accurately establish which of the four people in the room has the best grasp of a variety of topics, Y must have an even better understanding of those subjects than the people in the room. Inside the room, after his interviews are completed, if Y is honest and capable of making the determination, Y will say, I am the smartest person in the room, which I have done on numerous occasions. If Y conducts the survey outside the room, say, maybe a conference call, then Y can truthfully and objectively report which of the four people is the smartest in the room. Follow me here? In either event, Y must be smarter than all the people in the room to inform us of the name of the smartest person therein. It's getting hot in here. It's getting complicated. I'm starting to confuse myself. Because I'm the smartest person in the room, and I'm the only one in the room. A room full of outstanding con artists, or politicians if you prefer, presents Y with an entirely different scenario. Machiavellian became an adjective defined as cunning, scheming, and unscrupulous, especially in politics or in advancing one's career, perhaps. For a reason, moral person Y will be hard-pressed to detect the greatest Machiavellian double deceiver in a room filled with Machiavellian double deceivers. Note that it will be impossible for those of us outside of the room to determine whether or not Y is part of some greater deception if Y identifies X as the smartest person in this room. Now you following me here. Where smartest means most deceivious or most devious, if Y is smart enough to detect the smartest con artist, it is highly likely that Y is either the biggest of the swindlers, no doubt, or that Y is covering for the greatest con man in the room. In either event, in this scenario, if Y claims that X is the Machiavellian smartest person in the room, there are reasons to doubt Y's conclusion because Y is a damn card artist himself, and he could be conning you. And thus, Obama is a moron. But, getting back to the quote from the New York Times, notice that the unnamed Democrat source says that Obama always believes that he is the smartest person in any room. Now, there's something... there's something creepy about this claim, if it's true. And my girl uses the word creepy like none other. None other. I mean, just on a sidebar, she used the word creepy like I've never heard before. But back to the subject matter. Everyone reading or listening to what I'm saying has been, at one time or another, the smartest person in a room. And we knew it at the time. But what kind of narcissism and or Machiavellian cunning must reside in the heart of a person who always believes he is the smartest person in any room? A friend of Socrates named Chaperon asked the oracle at Delphi if anyone was wiser than Socrates. The priestess for the oracle replied, "There was no one." And Socrates did not relish the proclamation that he was, in effect, the smartest person in any room. In fact, Socrates challenged the pronouncement. He said, "It seemed to me that the people with the greatest reputations for wisdom were almost entirely deficient, while others who were supposed to be their inferiors were much better qualified in practical intelligence." Well, that's what we call humility. The smartest person in one room fully understands that he may not be the smartest person in the next. That's a large part of what it takes to be the smartest person in the room. Obama, Obama, Obama. You know what I find interesting about all of this talk about Obama being so super smart and super intelligent and super this and super that and basically a god among us mere mortals? And I hearken back to earlier statements I made about great dictators from civilizations and governments past and more recent. They were also highly touted in the media of their day as being the smartest men in the room. And for those ladies, Catherine the Great of Russia, the smartest lady in the room. They were touted as being virtual gods among mere mortals, that their gifts for oratory, their gifts for inspiration, for inspiring others, their gifts for mesmerizing the masses with their wonderful oratory skills, that their charismatic presence was not of this world. They were proclaimed to be gods, in a way. And don't we know from history how those things turned out? How it all turned out? There is a great danger in proclaiming Barack Obama the smartest person in any room at any given time. He has proven to be not so smart most of the time. His gaffes are near legendary. Was he really all that smart? Was he the smartest person in the room when he proclaimed that the Cambridge, Massachusetts police acted stupidly? Or was there someone in that room who thought that even if it were true, it's probably not a good thing to say? Was there someone else in that room who thought that if I were standing there, I would not say that? Or all the other times that Obama said something really dumb in a room with maybe as many as 200 or more, or maybe two or three, was he considered to be the smartest person in the room, or outworldly, or even street smart, which he is not? That is obvious. No, what Barack Obama is another con artist, another Napoleon, another Benito Mussolini, another Adolf Hitler, who seeks to con the American people into thinking that he knows what's best for us, that he is our father figure, our big brother, and that his wisdom alone, is how we should govern our lives, how we should live our lives. Do what he says, not what he does. He smokes. He eats fatty foods. When have we not seen him in a Philly, have a Philly cheesesteak in one hand and a smoothie or frosty or snow cone or something sugary in the other hand whenever he is out at a restaurant? Is he sitting at the restaurant? Have you ever seen him having a salad or arugula, whatever the hell that is? Have you seen him sitting down to a plate of salad? No, you see him at pastry shops, cheesesteak places, pizza places, hot dogs, just chowing down. And yet, his ugly, fat wife wants our children and us to lay off the sugar, lay off the salt, lay off anything edible that she considers to be bad for us. While her fat ass chows down on whatever she likes. And he does too. But he is our father. We are to do as he says, not as he does. Obama is, in my opinion, a low-rent Hitler, a low-rent Mussolini, a low-budget Caesar, a low-rent wannabe dictator. He doesn't even have the tools. He couldn't carry Hitler's leather boots. He doesn't have the charisma or the tools to be a Hitler. He is so inept that I'm not suggesting that Hitler was a great man by any stretch of the imagination. I'm suggesting flat out that Hitler had more charisma and style than Barack Obama does. Barack Obama is a moron, and he is leading America on the path to destruction, and we are just as stupid to follow him. But you know what? There's a window of hope. America's coming back. We saw it this November. We witnessed it. We took great joy and solace in the elections this November. It suggests that the American people get it, finally. That the American people finally get it. And I am just thrilled about that. And there is hope for this great nation. We're not dead yet. But if we don't maintain vigil, if we don't keep putting people in the Senate and the House like Senator DeMint and Representative Bonnier, we're done. We're done as a great nation. There'll be no such thing as American exceptionalism. Our swagger will be gone. And that's really what Obama wants. Because deep down inside, I believe President Obama hates America. He despises the American way of life. Hell, in my opinion, he's not even an American. Oh yeah, I don't believe he wasn't born here and all that crap. I'm saying that he wasn't American, not American in his head, in his mind, in his heart. That's what I mean. But like I said, there's a window of hope. We're coming back, America. Keep voting Republican. Keep putting honest, good, heartfelt Americans in office, and we'll be just fine. Thank you for listening, and hey, I'll see you tomorrow. Y'all have a good night, and Merry Christmas. Damn it, not Happy Holiday. Merry Christmas.
Like it's your best friend, thinking it's an inescapable bliss.